I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, the final countdown. We are hours away from the start of the 52nd annual March for Life in Washington, D.C. Join us as we preview the event. A Catholic perspective. A closer look at the role the faithful will play in the second Trump administration. Spreading the good news. We take you to a conference in Rome analyzing new ways for the church to communicate. Plus, science supporting life. We speak with a professor who is doing groundbreaking research into the effects of abortion. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on a special EWTN News Nightly with a preview of tomorrow's March for Life. The 52nd annual March for Life is set for tomorrow right here in Washington, D.C. The annual rally brings tens of thousands of pro-lifers, all lending their voices to help the unborn. The theme this year is Every Life, Why We March, which is meant to remind us that every life has inherent human dignity right from the start. Speakers include Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, New Jersey Republican Chris Smith, and live-action President Lila Rose. Well, there are reports tonight that President Donald Trump may pardon several pro-life advocates who were jailed under the previous administration for protests at abortion clinics. Also, it has been announced that Vice President J.D. Vance will speak at the March for Life rally tomorrow, a sharp contrast from the Biden administration. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Even with Donald Trump now in the Oval Office, for pro-lifers marching here tomorrow in the nation's capital, there are still many big obstacles to overcome in the fight to protect the unborn.
A year ago, then-President Joe Biden heads towards Marine One.
The March for Life is tomorrow in Washington, D.C. What's your message to those attending?
March.
A year later, President Donald Trump is back in the White House.
Hello, everybody.
However, he now believes abortion is up to the states and won't restrict access to abortion drugs. As pro-life supporters descend on Washington, D.C., they're hoping Trump will defund Planned Parenthood and prevent U.S. taxpayer dollars from paying for abortions overseas. But it's still very early in the administration. And, looking ahead, pro-life advocate Carrie Gress recently told EWTN,
there's so many things that we've got to do post Roe and Dobbs. And I think the bigger thing that we have to do that really addresses this issue as well is get back into the culture and start reminding people, you know, the beauty of motherhood.
Tomorrow, President Trump is traveling. He was the first president to attend the March for Life in person back in 2020. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And as just mentioned, a new report says that President Trump is set to pardon several pro-life advocates who were put in jail during the Biden administration. The report in the Daily Wire says that the pardons could come within days, with sources adding that freeing pro-lifers is an immediate priority. Just days into his second term, Trump issued a sweeping executive order on Monday that granted full pardons for about 1,500 criminal defendants related to the January 6th Capitol riot. Well, it is Pro-Life Week for Republican lawmakers. The GOP-controlled Congress is highlighting several new bills, signaling their emphasis on the importance of protecting the lives of the unborn. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest. Eric?
Good evening, Tracy. This is the first time in years that Republicans in Congress have been able to take the lead in trying to pass pro-life bills. Some are new, while others are attempting to get rid of policies passed by the Biden administration. Congressman Jim Jordan tells me, the time is now.
Life is precious. It's a gift from God. It's sacred. It's important. And stressing that, and I understand now with the decision we have in it state by state, but just that sort of that basic message is what happens every January.
The House Republicans' leadership's first batch of bills include a measure to protect babies who survive abortions. It's called the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. It passed the House but did not advance in the Senate. Pro-life Congressman Chip Roy wants to protect life on college campuses. He's introduced a bill to withhold taxpayer dollars from universities that push abortion pills on students. He wrote, quote, "We especially should not be funding colleges that dole these dangerous pills out to students to use in their dorms without medical supervision."
Congressman Roy and more than 20 other House Republicans are also backing a bill that would repeal the law known as the FACE Act. It's used by the Biden administration to prosecute dozens of pro-life activists who protest outside of abortion clinics. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Our pro-lifers are also making a mark in the new Trump administration. Secretary of State Marco Rubio was the first of President Trump's cabinet appointees to be approved by Congress. The former Florida senator is also one of several Catholics set for prominent roles within the new administration, as is Vice President J.D. Vance, shown here, swearing in Rubio earlier this week. Prior to Rubio's confirmation, we spoke with an expert on the topic of Catholics in public policy. And for more, we turn now to Richard Wood, president of the Institute for Advanced Catholic Studies at the University of Southern California. Richard, great to be with you today. Jumping right in right here, President-elect Trump has selected several Catholics as nominees for his cabinet, including Marco Rubio as Secretary of State, Elise Stefanik as Ambassador to the United Nations, and John Ratcliffe to head the CIA. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Is it unprecedented to have so many Catholics in a presidential cabinet like this?
You know, it's certainly noteworthy, Tracy, but it's not unprecedented. Joe Biden, President Biden, has had about a third of his cabinet picks have been Catholic. And there's a long history of Catholics serving in prominent roles in the cabinet, housing and urban development, health and human services in particular. What's striking here is how prominent some of those roles are. And let's mention Vice President J.D. Vance is a Catholic convert as well. So not unprecedented, but important.
Looking back at the last Trump presidency and this new administration, any possible differences, do you think, between the two?
You know, I think there will be some differences. Certainly, incoming President Trump has shifted his stance on abortion policy. I think the consistency across both administrations around immigration policy, I think those may create some tension with the Catholic world. But there's some other areas. Vice President Vance, Marco Rubio have talked a lot about the Republican Party and the incoming Trump administration reaching out, really trying to create economic policy that serves working class Americans, middle class Americans. Is that going to be the new administration, or is it going to more emphasize tax cuts to the wealthy? The former would be very much in keeping with Catholic teaching. The latter would not be. But that remains to be seen.
Yeah. And in this 2024 election, President-elect Trump did really well with Catholic voters. Is there an expectation that that success that he had at the ballot box will translate into policy? Talk a little bit more about that, if you will.
Yeah. I think that's hard to foresee, Tracy. I think the thing to look for might be the tone and tenor of the Trump administration and how it weighs in on public policy. You know, Catholic teaching says something about particular issues, but it also talks about a kind of productive, constructive tone of public life. And do some of these new Catholic leaders in the administration help balance out the more combative, more polarizing tone with a more constructive way of engaging in public dialogue that really builds on the best of the Catholic tradition? I think it's good. That's a thing for Catholics to look at.
Richard, thank you so much for weighing in and for your insights. We appreciate it. Richard Wood, president of the Institute for Advanced Catholic Studies at the University of Southern California. Thank you so much, sir.
Great. Thank you much. And let's all keep a prayer for the future of the country. Thank you. Bye now.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a look at some groundbreaking scientific research into the effects of abortion and an interview with an exorcist. Monsignor Stephen Rossetti talks to us about the reality of fighting the devil. Welcome back. A professor at Franciscan University of Steubenville is providing groundbreaking research into abortion. Dr. Stephen Samud examines abortion from a purely physiological level. His results on an animal model showed depression, anxiety, life behaviors, and long-term cellular consequences. He also examined the reality of abortion pill reversal, showing that the abortion was reversed in more than 80% of the animals. And Dr. Stephen Samut joins us now. He is a behavioral neuroscientist and professor of psychology at Franciscan University of Steubenville and the principal investigator and head of his research laboratory doing first-of-its-kind pro-life research. Dr. Samut, great to be with you, and thank you for all that you're doing for life. First, tell us, what compelled you to do this type of research, and what makes your lab different from others that study abortion?
The major reason that compelled me to start this research was the fact that this question had not been answered. We have been administering the abortion pill for many years, yet the preclinical research that was necessary, that is usually done also in any situation, was not done. All research prior to mine focused on the efficacy of the abortion pill in inducing abortion. My question was, well, what does it do to the female that it is consuming this pill and inducing the pregnancy termination? That is an aspect that had not been investigated at the preclinical level, so I sought to address that question.
Yeah, and we mentioned briefly that your findings that abortion leads to depression and anxiety-like behaviors. We've heard that before. And also long-term cellular consequences. Talk to us more about that. And was there anything in your findings that even surprised you?
The depression and anxiety-like behaviors were not really surprising. Let's put it that way. And the reason for that is we know that pregnancy is a natural process. We know it's a symbiotic relationship. And we know the amount of work that the body goes into in order to prepare the body of the female for the pregnancy. Therefore, when you mess around with the body and terminate a pregnancy process that is natural and is viable, you would expect some negative consequences, exactly what they were going to be. Fine, I was not exactly expecting to see what I actually saw, in the sense that it needed to be tested. This is an aspect that needed to be tested. However, we have the human evidence, the clinical evidence, that talks to us with regards to the depression, anxiety, increased suicidality, drug abuse, and all of this. So there was that precedent, there was that background to go on. Therefore, my hypothesis, my thinking was that if we messed around with a pregnancy, what we would see is some sort of change in the body that could potentially lead to anxiety and depression-like behaviors. Did I expect it? Well, I let the experiments talk for themselves. The other aspect pertaining to the fact that it's in an animal and that is important is also the fact that this is independent of social pressure and religious influence. Yes, I work at Franciscan University, but it doesn't matter how much holy water and sitting there reading the Bible won't make any difference to the rats. They are going to behave in the way they behave. It's a purely physiological response.
And I was going to ask you that, Doctor, the importance of research and of science and not just talking to people about their experience. Why is that important? Tell us more about that.
Well, if we approach it at least from a Catholic perspective, Christian perspective, we know that God created the universe and God does not contradict himself. Therefore, what science and our faith says ultimately should not really contradict themselves. Now, when you are going to do an experiment, you keep that at the back of your mind that you do not seek to influence your experiment. You let the experiment talk for itself. However, it is important, I think, for Christians and Catholics to understand that science does support the reality of the truth that we are taught with regards to the life that is in existence in the womb prior to birth. And it is a life. It is not just a lump of cells. After all, the regulations for the ethical treatment of animals also discusses the pre-born animal as an animal. Therefore, if an animal is an animal in utero before it's born, then why is a human not a human in utero?
Well, Dr. Stephen Samut, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about this and for the research that you're doing. We really appreciate it, and God bless you and God bless your work.
Thank you so much.
Well, from the fight to life, for life, to fighting the devil, an international Catholic organization that provides support and training for exorcists is expressing concern over how some exorcisms are being administered. The International Association of Exorcists has named 9 practices to avoid when battling Satan, saying that some of these, quote, do not correspond to the authentic work of Christ. The tactics to avoid include focusing on the work of the devil and not on the gospel, excluding medical and psychological sciences, and trying to heal previous generations. And for analysis, we turn now to Monsignor Stephen Rossetti, author of Diary of an American Exorcist and a research associate professor in the pastoral studies at the Catholic University of America. Monsignor Rossetti, always great to have you on the show. First, let's get your thoughts on these new guidelines from the International Association of Exorcists. What prompted the release?
Well, Tracy, there has been very little actually helping exorcists figure out how to do this ministry. There's a few what we call pre-notandas, notes before the rite, but very little guidelines, very few guidelines. So the AIE, that international organization in Rome, is trying to do that, standardize this ministry.
Yeah. And of the nine practices to avoid, do any of them apply to lay faithful? And are most or all of them, are they directed toward exorcists?
Well, they're directed towards exorcists, but it does affect the lay people helping them. For example, one of the concerns was, how does one use lay collaborators, especially if they're charismatic or gifted? And I think the AIE is trying to say, sure, we can use people with special gifts, but the primary responsibility, the leadership and discernment, is with the exorcist.
Yeah. How widespread are these nine practices? And what's been the reaction, you know, since this text was released?
Well, I think that I'm not sure it's been widely read at this point. I'm going to sit down with about 30 exorcists in a couple of weeks. I'm going to go through it point by point. So I think that it's something that needs to be promulgated a little bit more.
Yeah. I know the group also said that in recent years, the number of those seeking out exorcists, that's really increased. Why do you think that is? And what does that signal to you, Monsignor?
It's a mob. I mean, we just buried. I mean, people, you know that we have 220,000 followers on social media. We get calls every day. So there's a flood of interest, not only in the subject in general, but a whole bunch of people looking for help. And I think a lot of is because of the decline in faith. And the people start practicing sinful or occult behaviors, and it's having a negative effect.
Yeah. Have you seen an increase in that, those sinful and cult behaviors? I mean, and is it coming primarily, say, maybe from the United States or Europe, South America? Is there any way to pinpoint that?
Well, it's all over the world. But, for example, Witch Talk, which is a subset of TikTok, has something like 30 billion views. There's a lot of people practicing tarot cards, curses, spells, whatever, and they have no idea how dangerous it is. So I think that there is this move away from traditional Christianity in some areas, and people starting to do these very dangerous spiritual practices. And it's becoming more widespread.
Yeah, Monsignor Rossetti, talk to us about that. You know, I'm sure our audience is well aware of that, but maybe somebody's just tuning in and they're hearing this and they think, well, what's this witch talk? I'm gonna go on here. It's not that big of a deal. Talk to us about the dangers of this stuff.
Well, right. And people don't realize how dangerous it is. There are some people who say, well, I can practice witchcraft during the week or curses or spells or tarot cards or whatever, and I go to Mass on Sunday. If you actually read the Bible, it is very strong. It calls such behaviors an abomination because it is a violation of the first commandment, and it's an open door to the demonic. And we've seen this many times.
Yeah. Monsignor Rossetti, we ran out of time, but always great to have you on. We'll have to get you back on again. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
It's a joy, Tracy, and God bless your ministry.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the ancient church meets the digital age. We'll take you to Rome to show you how church leaders and experts from around the world are planning for the future. Age is changing everything about how we communicate. In Rome, church leaders and experts from around the globe are gathering to exchange ideas and explore new ways to share the church's message of hope and faith in an ever-changing media landscape. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigren has more.
How can the church communicate better in today's fast-paced world? This is the big question being tackled in Rome at the 14th Professional Seminar for Church Communication Offices, hosted by the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross. The international seminar, titled Communication and Evangelization, Context, Attitudes, Experiences, is part of this year's Jubilee of the World of Communications. From digital strategy to crisis management, global experts are sharing ideas to explore how the Church can better engage with a rapidly changing media landscape and more effectively spread the message of the gospel.
I really firmly think that all of you in your experiences in the Church would possibly agree that we haven't reached the number of people that we want to reach. And if we have reached them, we have not yet mobilized them into an incarnational translation of that digital experience into one like the one we have here in this room.
The many interactive sessions, debates, and roundtable discussions offer insights on how communication efforts can support evangelization in the digital world.
The Jubilee asks us for conversion, and the title of the seminar is called Communication and Evangelization, because there is no real conversion without encountering the Word of God. No? So we are calling to all people that works in the field of communications, in the service of the Church, and in the service of society, to propose the Christian message in a new way, and in a way, and probably in a more hopeful way.
Over the next 2 days, over 500 communication professionals from dioceses, episcopal conferences, and congregations around the world will gather at the Pontifical University to listen to each other's experiences, learn from renowned experts, re-examine how they communicate with others, and can better share the gospel in today's world. In an increasingly crisis-ridden world, it is clear that it has become more crucial than ever for the Church to share her message of joy and hope, rooted in Jesus Christ, with all.
Hope is not only for Christians. Hope is a universal experience. Communicators, television, the press, the various forms of communication. Each of us experiences hope, and so that personal experience can truly become a tool of communication for others as well.
Uno strumento di comunicazione anche per gli altri.
In Rome, Benedizia De Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And before we go, a quick reminder to join us on Friday for all-day live coverage of the March for Life. We have reporters on the ground, special guests, and special reports from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. You do not want to miss it. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. We leave you tonight with the sights and sounds from last year's March for Life in Washington, D.C. Good night, and God bless.
Done.
It's a great day for a march. It's a great day. This is football weather. Let's go.
Including the right to life and liberty. But every unborn child has a value that is too profound and precious to ignore.
Para defender a vida com todo mundo.
To defend life in all the world.
But we are undeterred. We will not give up. We will never, 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 with the grace of God, never quit in our defense for the weakest and the most vulnerable. Thank you.